You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Three-time Tony Award winner Frank Langella has established himself as one of the very finest human chameleons as he morphs almost beyond recognition from one role to the next. And that's particularly obvious these days. Eight times a week, he's Sir Thomas More in A Man for All Seasons on Broadway at the American Airlines Theater. And starting tomorrow at the AMC Lincoln Square, he is a Richard Nixon for all ages in the film version of the hit play Frost Nixon. And I'm very pleased that they have brought the many Frank Langellas to the show again. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Leonard. Nice to be back.
Does it feel like Sir Thomas More and Richard M. Nixon are about as far apart as any two characters can be?
Well, actually, no, it doesn't. sorry, a bit of a cold. They actually are similar in more ways than I thought they would be. Singularly thinking men. And men who live in a place in their head that almost nobody else can get to or go to.
But Sir Thomas More refused to bow to King Henry VIII's wishes when he annulled a two-decade-long marriage to the Queen of Aragon. He's a man of principle, and he died of it, whereas Richard M. Nixon's principles were a lot more fluid.
Yeah, but those are the circumstances of their lives. What I mean is the sort of mental mindset it takes to think a way that almost no one else does, and both of those men possess that. There is no one else I can think of who would refuse to sign the paper, give up their family, give up everything that was good about life, and have their head chopped off. And there's no one else I can think of quite like Richard Nixon's paranoid, extraordinarily singular, suspicious mind. In that sense, they're similar.
And they're insider outsiders.
Yeah. They're one of a kind. That's what I mean by that.
The difference in their mannerisms and speech are total.
Yeah.
That's where the acting comes in? Or does it come in from the very start? Do you think about the psychology of these men?
I just was waiting to come and sit and talk to you, and there was a very large photograph of me in a newspaper in your outer office, and I didn't recognize myself. I don't. When I see these photographs from the film, I don't see me. I just see Richard Nixon. And all that happened from the inside out. It wasn't something I pasted on or thought to do. It just happened.
Do you have to come to like a character, at least on some level, in order to portray him well?
You have to love him. You really have to do. You have to feel great passion for him and great protection for him.
So you love Richard Nixon on some level?
Yes, I do. I loved playing him, and I loved getting inside. And I say love in the sense of what an actor can feel about a great role, which I feel about both of these men, Sir Thomas More and Richard Nixon. And what I think I could say I loved most about getting inside the mind of Richard Nixon was coming to understand how much the power of inner voices control all of us, how much we are victims of the tiny little voices in our head that tell us we can't, we shouldn't, we mustn't, we don't deserve, we have no right. And those voices come from when we're very little, and they're universal in all of us. And Nixon's voices were obviously louder and stronger than many. And he made us uncomfortable because he seemed to wear them on his visage. We seemed to see them as he walked in the room. And my theory is that he reminded us all too much of the worst in ourselves, which is why the man got so vilified.
But it's interesting also, this has been the subject of the theater since the Greeks, isn't it? Richard Nixon almost seems like a character invented by Euripides.
Yes, he does. He's Lear, as well. He's a great, huge, tragic figure. You can see him in an Anka, in those standing outside in a great amphitheater.
Is it harder to play a good man than a scoundrel?
Yes.
Because you're playing a good man right now.
Yes, it's harder to play Thomas More than it was. Eventually, it was very hard to find Nixon for the first weeks. But now that I'm playing Thomas More every night, first of all, it's twice as long. But second of all, it's much more difficult to play pure and clear and innocent of a kind and and not have much gray matter to go to. You know, when a man's mind is set as clearly and as honorably as Sir Thomas More's is, and when he, as he says in the play, I do no harm, I say no harm, I think no harm, and I, like most human beings, occasionally do harm, say harm, and think harm, when you have to play a man who doesn't, you have to call on reservoirs of the very, very best in you.
Because he can come across as boring or prissy or self-righteous, and you don't want him to come across as any of those things.
Well, both men presented that problem. I've got another 10 or 12 performances of Sir Thomas More, and every night I have to keep a very sharp ear on myself that I never sound in any way self-righteous or noble, but just pure. And, you know, Sir Thomas More says a man's soul is his self. As in Heartbreak House, when, I can't remember the character, the famous character says, stick to your soul and it will stick to you. That's the essence of what Thomas More is, and that's what most people can't do.
You said you have a dozen more performances. That's because the show, which is, as I said, at the American Airlines Theater on West 42nd Street, closes on the 14th.
Yes.
And then that's it for you? Well, first I'll ask, is that it for you with this,
in
this part?
In what sense do you mean that? I hope not.
With this part.
Oh, with this part, yes, that's it.
On the other hand, you played Frost Nixon first in London, mm-hmm. and then here, and then in the film. Did you know that it was just going to keep on going and going
no.
and going?
Frost Nixon.
This is like playing vampires. It's
yes.
something that just took off for you.
Forever and endless. Frost Nixon was meant to be 8 weeks in a little theater in Covent Garden, and that was the end of it. And it then was 10, 12 more weeks in the West End, 16 weeks on Broadway, and another 2 months with the movie.
You said that you learned the character as you continued to play him, and that was happening through the various incarnations in England and here?
Yes. I had two directors, three casts, with the exception of my co-star, Michael Sheen, who played Frost throughout. And in each one of those incarnations and in each one of those rehearsal periods, I looked afresh at the character each time. It didn't. It seemed to me a great opportunity to refine him each time, rather than to say, "This is what I always do. Let's do that."
Although you were playing against, to the large part, the same actor, playing David Frost, and I assume that constancy helped.
Yes,
although
of course
it did. I'm sure he was developing his David Frost as well.
Of course, and we had very separate agendas, which was exactly right for our characters.
And did the English respond differently to this story? Because I'm sure they were all fascinated by Richard Nixon, but they had a very different take on him than we did.
Yes, they were. I remember the very first preview in New York. I think we played the Jacobs Theater, I'm not sure, but I think we did, or the Schoenfeld, I can't remember. But at the very first preview, when I walked out, I was greeted, before I said a word, with a kind of laughter that went right through the house. And then I said a couple of lines, and they got the sort of laughter that I had never gotten in England. And I had to totally calibrate and readjust, because I realized that they wanted me to be funny. And they wanted me to be a caricature of Nixon. And because I tried my best to adapt his look and his walk, the moment they saw me, they thought, oh, we're in for a very good time. So I had to keep his humor, which there was a great deal of in the play, but then realize, oh, I'm in America now. And their investment is going to be different. And I sort of, in a way, had to say to the audience, no, we're not going to make fun of him, and we're not going to play the cliche of him. You'll find him funny. But that funniness hopefully will come up out of the humanity.
Because you're not doing Rich Little's version of Richard Nixon.
No, and I couldn't.
Frank Langella is playing Sir Thomas More in A Man for All Seasons now through the 14th of this month. But you'll be able to see his performance in the film version of Frost Nixon, which opens tomorrow in an exclusive engagement at the MC Lincoln Square on Broadway and 68th Street forever, because movies have a way of unless they were made a long time ago, of surviving forever. And I'm sure that that's something that's in your mind as well, isn't it? I mean, each night when you're on the stage, you're doing a unique thing. But when you make a movie, it's kind of engraved in stone.
Well, they're both rewarding in different ways. The idea that Nixon, for better or for worse, is now forever is very pleasurable to me, because he was in my life for a very long time, and the notion that he's now immortalized in a certain kind of way, I don't mean to aggrandize it, but there he is now, you can always watch it. And also the performance has been photographed, the stage performance was photographed for Lincoln Center. And the other joy of going every night to do something is the discovery of finding it anew, which is what I'm doing with Sir Thomas More.
And every night the performance has changed, because you're working against other actors, and part of acting is responding, isn't it?
Yes, well, you need to do something extremely hard when you're an actor on the stage, and young actors don't know it. You need to listen with every fiber of your being. It's one of the clues. You need two things within yourself. You need energy and you need breath. Without either of those, you can't do it. But the third is, it's just so important to listen as hard as possible.
Not always the case when you're making a film, because often close-ups are shot with just the actor talking as though someone else were listening.
Yeah. Well, listening actually is getting to be less and less and less popular, isn't it? Because there's so many diversions now in life. You walk down the street and you can hardly find anybody who's going to really hear you, because they've got something stuck in their ear, or they're looking at something that they're pressing buttons on. No one seems to be living in the moment anymore.
Rod Steiger was here some years back, and he was outraged by Marlon Brando still, because in the famous taxi cab scene in On the Waterfront, he sat and listened while Marlon delivered his lines, and then Marlon got up and walked away while it was his turn, and he said he thought that was very unprofessional. I spoke to another actor who said, well, I actually prefer that, because I don't want the distraction of the other person looking at me when I'm doing those lines.
Well, you know, it's a double-edged sword. I see both sides of it. Oddly enough, on the stage, of course, you need it more, because it's live and moment to moment. But if you're truly deeply and profoundly inside a character, it really doesn't matter. It helps, but if you know what you're doing and want to communicate something, you can do it. There's a great scene in the film of Dracula when I come galloping up on a horse, and there's a wonderful exchange between Sir Laurence Olivier and I. And Larry had long since left the movie. He'd been gone for almost 2 months when we shot my side of it. And I remember that I galloped up in the wind and the rain in the master. And then when they did my close-ups, they were months later on a back lot with garbage cans everywhere and a big stick in the ground with an 8x10 of Laurence Olivier's face. And I played the entire scene to that photograph.
But had you watched the footage to remind yourself of how he had delivered the lines, or
no,
did it matter?
No, I hadn't watched it at all. There's Paul Newman has left us, but Paul gave probably one of the greatest pieces of advice I've ever heard an actor give. He was asked once, what do you do when the situation is not optimal? You know, when perhaps something like this happens, you don't have the actor. He's long since gone back home, and you have to play it to a stick in a mud. Or what do you do if you have an actor who's not giving you the right thing, or the costume doesn't fit, or the director's pushing you too hard? How do you survive all those distractions and sometimes those negative forces? And Paul said four brilliant words: I play my character. And that really is what an actor should do. Hold on with every fiber of his being to his character.
My guest is Frank Langella, who is currently on Broadway in A Man for All Seasons, playing Sir Thomas More. That run ends just a week or so from now, on December 14th. He is also in Frost Nixon, which opens tomorrow at the AMC Lincoln Square on Broadway and 68th Street. We will continue our conversation after this. ¶¶ We're back with Franklin Jella, who is currently on Broadway as Sir Thomas More in A Man for All Seasons. That's at the American Airlines Theater, 227 West 42nd Street. But the show is running just through December 14th. He will also be Richard Nixon starting tomorrow in the film version of Frost Nixon. It's in an exclusive engagement at the AMC Lincoln Square on Broadway and 68th Street. How soon after you completed the run of the play, Frost Nixon, did you start shooting the film?
24 hours after we closed on Broadway, I got on a plane and went to L.A. and began re-rehearsing with a new company, costume fittings, wig fittings, makeup tries, all those things. And I think I was on camera about 14 or 15 days later.
And it has to be odd to some degree because the script is different, even though it's written by the same writer. The film has compressed certain things, changed certain things. So is there a problem sometimes? You got to slip into the version that you've been doing for months and months on stage?
There was only a desire on my part not to do what you often see recreations of plays do in the films. It not to feel or look stagey or in any way hang on to something that worked beautifully, in your mind at least, in front of an audience. And Ron Howard in that instance was extraordinarily good with me because he's very, very there. You know, he's in your face. He's close to the camera. He watches on a video, but he comes onto the set after every take. He's got a little piece of paper, a little envelope in his hand, and he's scribbling notes and whispering to you about this moment or that moment. And he gave me, on the first few days, the freedom to take as much time in a scene as I saw fit and break the pattern of the timing of my scenes in the play, which I felt I would break anyway, but I realized there was a certain body truth to what I was doing, a body knowledge, rather, after a year of it. And Ron said, I don't care how long you stare at Michael before you say this line. I don't care if you say it now or later. I don't care how much time you take doing anything. I have a scissor, and I have an editor.
So it's very different when you work with a director who's a child of films, as
yes.
Ron Howard is, when you work with somebody whose main work has been in the States, like Michael Grandage.
Yes. Also, there are directors, and I have worked with a lot of them in the last 10 or 12 years, who really like a great many takes. George Clooney is not one of those directors, and Good Night and Good Luck, we got it in two or three takes.
And it worked well.
And we moved on. Ron Howard, Adrian Lyne, Roman Polanski, Ivan Reitman, a few others I've worked with recently, will do up to 25 or 30 takes of something. So you have many, many, many opportunities to try in many different ways.
Have you ever wondered why that take was the one that made it rather than the other one? Because I'm sure there are times when you've thought, oh, that was just about as good as it could get.
I stopped thinking about that a long time ago because that way lies madness for an actor. When I was a young actor, I would try to keep in my head, oh, in take four, this happened well. In take nine, I did that. And what I've learned over the years that's really remarkably helpful for me is once you do a take and the director says, oh, that was great, they usually say that anyway, even if it wasn't, that was great, let's do another one. Then you say, well, why do you want to do another one if that was great? But when you do another one, you don't have any memory of the one you did before. You really try very hard to erase the last take. And you don't recreate what you just did. You create afresh. So whether it's two takes or three, or whether it's in some cases, in Frost Nixon, 30, the quickest way to do it for me is to erase what I just did. Take a deep breath and just do it again, as if it were the next night in a play.
Well, I've seen singers who had to do take after take after take, and they've said after the seventh or eighth take, they start losing it.
Yeah.
They start getting distracted, they start getting bored.
You can, but also I found it in Frost Nixon anyway, a real challenge to keep up with I knew that. I knew going in that this was going to be the modus operandi with Ron. He's well known for this, and I also knew that he'd cover the scene from the front, the side, the back, across the street, over my shoulder, up from the floor. I knew that he would do many takes, so I was prepared to exist in his environment, because the film is the director's environment. And also with George, with Clooney in Good Night and Good Luck, I don't think there's anything in that film of mine that was more than the second or third take. And it's the director's eye you really have to be aware of, not your own.
I suspect it also comes out of the director's experience, if he was or she was an actor, as both of those people were. Ron Howard was a TV actor, probably felt frustrated that everything was on one or two takes, whereas George Clooney is a movie actor, and I'm sure he's thought, oh, God, the fifth take.
No, I think it's something else. Well, both of them are actors, but I also think it's something else that a lot of actors don't understand. The director is looking for a number of things, and what you may think is the high point of your performance, the very moment you think is the one that sells your character. You'll go and see the film, and he's on a fish in a pond somewhere, or he's on the other actor's reaction. And you have to have the ability to step back and say, it's the director who's telling this story, not me. Therefore, I must make every single moment count when I am on camera, and hope that he will shape and create the character I want. But you have to step back and realize ultimately it's his vision, not yours.
My guest is Frank Langella, who is Richard Nixon in Frost Nixon and Sir Thomas More on Broadway. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, always. Since you're being Thomas More on Broadway, is it weird for you to be discussing Nixon at this point? I was wondering whether once you've been someone, does that person stay with you for a while, in the way that some writers will say a character will stay with them long after they've completed the work?
No one has ever stayed with me very long except this man, except Richard Nixon. I'll leave Thomas More on the 14th pretty easily.
Mm-hmm. You leave him every night when the curtain comes down?
I leave him by the time the curtain call is started, actually. But Richard Nixon will be, I think, forever, unless I come across another character in whatever years I have left to keep doing this, Richard Nixon will be the man who I felt the greatest emotional connection to, and who I can evoke at any moment in my mind.
And why is that? Do you feel a personal connection to him?
Yes, I do. I feel if one allows oneself. It's interesting. There was apparently a contretemps the other night between. I mustn't speak of it because I don't know specifically, and I'll find out tomorrow. About a reporter saying to Ron, Richard Nixon was a son of a bitch. Richard Nixon was this. He was that. He was not this. He was not that. And I thought to myself, well, that's very interesting, because I've been in the company of people who are one thing when I'm in their company, and another thing when they're a public figure. I've seen gentle, sweet, loving, vulnerable men turn out to be absolute bastards when they're out in public or when they're doing whatever their job is. There are so many facets to human beings.
Well, it works the other way too, Frank. There are people who have reputations for being really terrible,
yes,
and then they come on a show like this, and they're just the most charming person possible.
Do you mean me?
I don't mean you, but they're.
Yeah,
I've had that experience more than once. Oh, they say, oh, this person's a terror. He's impossible. She's just awful. And then they come on, and they're just wonderful, and
yes,
we have a great time together.
And the point is, the very profound point we're making, I think, is that for the last 40 or 50 years, we have really chosen, most of us, most people, to think of Richard Nixon in this very small, limited box. Crook, drunk, venal, mean, liar, thief.
Watergate.
I mean, that's it. That's what Peter Morgan says at the end. Watergate will be forever his imprimatur. However, he was a father. He was a husband. He was a little boy who had a difficult father and had three brothers. He married. He had children. He could be any number of things. And it seemed to me foolish to go and recreate the standard version of him, because he is just like you and me, a male on the planet with many, many facets.
A film soon to open, The Reader, has had similar criticism because the woman involved, who we like as viewers, has done terrible things in the past as a guard in a concentration camp. And people have objected to the book and to the film because it's humanized a monster. But monsters also have lives in which they do nice things. They pet their dogs.
Yeah,
they love their children.
It's an interesting word, isn't it, monster? And it's been used in several interviews I've done. People have said, well, he was a monster. And I thought, wow, what an extraordinary word to use about a fellow human being.
Well, he's not exonerated in this film in any way.
No, he's not. And in fact, he did some awful, awful things, and in fact, no one paid a greater price for it than he did.
Did you watch all of the tapes in preparation?
Yes.
Do you think that he was very much of his time? Because he was a child of the media. His career was largely helped by television. Everybody talks about how it was destroyed by the debates, but earlier TV had really allowed him to continue as the vice presidential candidate when he delivered the Checkers speech.
TV saved him, and if you watch that interview, he was so bad in it, so obvious, taking his fist and doing this for strength and having the camera eke itself over to Pat, who was sitting there very primly watching him, and then having the camera eke back, and then there was a moment when he got up and came around the desk. It was like bad amateur acting of what a strong politician should be.
So we have changed, but he's very much a man of his time, don't you think?
Yes, and I don't think I can think of anybody in the recent presidential debates, all the recent politicians, who aren't pretty good about this now. You rarely see anyone with the ill at ease and obvious amateurism of self-presentation that he had in the early days. He got better at it.
Wasn't the film done at his real home in San Clemente?
Yes.
That is probably a rare treat for an actor, isn't it?
Well, one afternoon, Kevin Bacon and I got into the back of a 70s limo, walking out the very hallway, down the very steps, and into a car that drove down the very driveway that Nixon drove down on his way to Monarch Bay to do the interviews. And then when we reversed and came back, standing there was the owner of the house who'd bought it from Nixon, who said, Mr. Nixon stepped out on this day from that interview at this moment. And then we walked down to the water, and I stood and looked out over the sea that he looked out over. Beautiful home, elegant, lovely home.
And is that like wearing the right costume? It just adds something to the performance?
Yes, it helped. It all helps. But again, as I said earlier, if your character isn't inside you, if you're not possessed by him down to your toes, and it doesn't matter, it could be Nixon or Thomas More or the character in Good Night and Good Luck, you have to own it.
Well, in the cases of contemporary characters, you can see footage of them. In the case of Sir Thomas More, you had to kind of invent him. And I don't know whether you saw Paul Scofield's performance of
him. Yes,
many
times.
Well, that had to have been something you had to work against, whereas Nixon you had to work with.
No, actually, I thought Paul Scofield's performance, my watching that performance was really wonderful research for me. I must have watched the film about 5 or 6 times, because I thought we play it entirely differently. But I watched him very carefully. I watched his choices and his decisions very carefully, and there were a few things in there that I thought were such inside gold that I just stole them. But I have a whole other approach to Thomas than he did.
Well, actors can help each other. One actor told me that, now I'm trying to remember what the line was, but it was some famous line, and the other actor said, it's not the line that everybody stresses, the word that everybody stresses, it's that other word that you should really keep in mind, and he said it just opened up a whole character for
him. It does. Actors, particularly American actors, really are have each other's backs all the time, and they are very, very collegial. This is the company of A Man for All Seasons is close to the most wonderful group of actors I've ever worked with. It's a very, not only a happy company, but a very dedicated company every single night. I'm really very proud to be with them all.
And then it closes. Do you know what you'll be doing next?
No, I know I'm going to have a wonderful holiday for the first time in about 2.5-3 years, a period of work I'm extremely grateful for, but now I'm grateful for some time off, and I sort of like not knowing. I think if you don't live your life, if you don't complicate it with all the forces that we all have to go through, your acting will dry up. You should have a very complicated, difficult, sometimes stressful, sometimes happy, there should be so many things coming in on you, so many forces, that when you finally get in front of a camera or in front of an audience, all that complication's working inside you, and you turn it into art.
Because that is a problem for young actors whose experience of life is largely acting.
Well, it isn't only a question of youth. It's also, if you lay in a garret all day and, you know, go put yourself on vocal rest, whatever that is, it's a phrase that seems to have come into fashion in the last 10 years, and you protect yourself all day long, you're not going to be as good as at night. Because you're going to have come from a day of self-protection and self-concern. Whereas if your day is full of fighting with your wife and having to take care of an ailing parent and taking your kids to school and wrestling with career and money and stuff, when you get to that hallowed place, which is to walk out on stage, the adrenaline takes over and all of the stuff that's been going on in you all day can get molded and shaped into a performance as opposed to coming on supposedly clear and clean with nothing in your mind.
Frank Langella is going to be performing as Sir Thomas More for
It's today Thursday until Sunday the 14th, so it's about 8 or 10 more shows. Or 12
counting
more
matinees
shows.
Or whatever. That's A Man for All Seasons at the American Airlines Theater, 227 West 42nd Street. And Frost Nixon opens tomorrow in an exclusive engagement at the AMC, Lincoln Square on Broadway and 68th Street. If you saw the play, that will not ruin the experience of the film. They're the same, and yet they're very different.
Yes, they are. They're well, more different than the same, I think. There is an emotional wallop, I think, in the film. That's only achievable when a camera comes right up to your eyeball, you know.
Thank you so much for being with us again.
Always a pleasure, Leonard. I'll see you on the next one, whatever it might be.
I hope you get another job soon.
Well, I do, too. You got anything?